And welcome to Marooned at MacBytes headquarters, day 162. And the beginning of a new week. I've sorted out the math. It's week 24. I'm confident it's week 24. Do you know what's confusing me?
What?
I use week numbers on my calendar, and it's week 35.
Yeah.
So I've now twigged the way that I need to work it out is take the week number that I work with and take 11. Take 11 off it and I'm sorted. So how is everybody? Do you think Jonathan's recovered yet? Let me get into the
chat. Why
is
the NatWest app verifying my device and has been for the last 20 seconds?
That's not good.
It's not.
Maybe, like Zoom, it's down.
Could be.
Zoom's had a bit of a moment today, apparently.
I've had a bit of a moment.
Were you hot and bothered?
Yeah, I'm always hot and bothered.
Good grief. Simon was first in. He's beaten Jonathan. Good evening to you, Simon.
I think Simon camped there from 10 to 7.
Simon can do whatever he likes.
He did, actually. 6:49.
Hello, Kim. Greetings from beautiful Seattle, ruined by riots. Don't. I actually watched one of my videos on YouTube the other day, and it was all about Seattle. So I got quite excited, as it said, and today we're going to be talking about Seattle. And then it was a murder.
So you watched one of your videos about Seattle?
Not my videos, obviously. The videos that I watch on YouTube. Right. And it was all about Seattle, but it wasn't the nice bits of Seattle, put it like that.
Seattle Sounders?
No, they'd found a body in a suitcase, basically.
Oh.
But never mind, eh?
Wasn't that a football team?
He's asking me like I
know. No, I'm asking Kim.
Hello, Jonathan. Have you recovered? How is the wall? Still impressed from your endeavours to get the paper off it. You've sort of recovered. Your legs ache. It's usually your arms, so I'm impressed. You filled in some little marks with filler tomorrow, sand it down, and then Wednesday wash it so Thursday you can get right to it. Isn't DIY hideous? It's hideous. I always remember my mum, the one job she absolutely loathed. She would do the papering, she would do painting, but the one job she loathed was the sugar soaping. That was not her favourite at all. Dad always got lumbered with the sugar soaping. Do you remember when she said at your flat, those walls are going to need doing sugar soap. I'll leave that to you, Mike. She hated it. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I was right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So Jonathan told somebody at work the saga, and she says, so what wallpaper are you going to replace it with? You're lost for words. Never. Never. It's not too difficult to get paper up, but as you've seen, that getting it up is actually easier than getting it off later. And it does take such a long time because each part of the job has to be done separately. So when you sugar soap the walls, you're going to need to let them dry. You can't just paint over it. It's not good. It really isn't good. Oh, poor Jonathan. CQ, CQ, Deb, how are you doing? Do you think we've like reached a peak now? Or do you reckon this is just going to be like this forever in this country?
Probably.
We had more deaths and the figures. I mean, they're not making these figures very easy to find. But today's figures were 860 people more with COVID. Death figures, I can't remember. There was one or two in Wales. In Scotland, I think we were maybe like 12. So the deaths have gone down. What's happening over here at the moment is all the, can I say lies about kids at school and COVID? Because it makes no sense. Boris is obsessed to get the children back to school. That health woman, you know, that Jenny Harris, she annoys me. She's just so condescending. She says, and Boris says, it's quite safe. So I'm reading this and I'm thinking, can't see it myself, but, you know, I'll play along with it. You say so. Children are more likely. So basically they're saying, children are going to be fine at school. Don't worry about it. Let's get the little ankle biters back in there. Okay. Then the story comes out. Children are far more likely to catch it at home. Okay, fair enough. But if, say, three children, so 10% of a class, got it and then went into school, does it kind of magically not spread at the door, or have I missed something? Doesn't matter where they're infected. If they're infected, they can pass it around. Isn't that how it works? Yes. That's what we've been told for the last 6 months. So I thought that was particularly stupid of them. Yep, enjoy your meeting. So that was the first point. And then a story came out that, so they really are pushing this, that, you know, children won't catch it and all of the rest of the things. And then a story came out, headlines on the news, 19 people at a school in Aberdeen, and it's a primary school, so it's a small school, are infected. I thought, last I heard, didn't spread at schools, just saying. So I can't understand it all. I think some people will send the children back, either because they are single parents and need to work, or both parents and they need to work, or they're sick of their children. But I can see a lot of people thinking, no, this is not happening. So what do you guys think? I think if it's going to spread, it's going to spread. They're saying it might not affect the children. No, but it's the teachers that they're giving it to. And then they're taking it home to their families. It's beyond stupid. But they seem to be doing it. And we're all supposed to just sit here and nod sagely at Boris. Boris, who caught it, if you'll remember. A title for the show. Getting it up is easier than getting it off later. Jonathan, I'm loving that. I think we might go for that, especially if it's Nova Miura. You've given up listening to the news, can't deal with it anymore. I totally agree. What annoys me is that what they said a few weeks ago, obviously in a few weeks, things can change. But the things that they said were like supposed to be immutable truths that they're now completely denying. And it doesn't do my blood pressure any good whatsoever. But I did have a look at that today. The figures in my state are flattening. No deaths, only 100 cases reported statewide. Wow. No, we're terrible here. Not as bad as Spain, apparently, in terms of numbers. But the places where the figures are not good, obviously Greater Manchester is still in lockdown. When did that happen? I think it's coming up for 4 weeks ago on Friday. We've had one review in 4 weeks. Other towns that are in lockdown are having a review every week. But what they've done this week, last Friday, we didn't get a review at all because they were far too busy putting three other cities into lockdown. They are to the northwest of Greater Manchester. So they would be the cities and towns that border the edge of where lockdown was the week before. So it's obviously spreading. Sky News sent a crew up to one of these places with a view to, like, why are the figures so much worse in Oldham than anywhere else? And they came back with with the conclusion, people have had it. They're done. They don't care. They were talking to people and it was like they were out shopping. Yes, they had masks on, but it was like, I'm not staying in my house anymore. I'm done with all this rubbish. So they came back and said, can't see these figures going down anytime soon because people aren't taking it seriously, which I can believe. I can totally believe that. I mean, people around here, what's ridiculous is, like, we shouldn't be meeting up with, like, our best friends, Nina and Mike, who live half a mile up the road. But they went to Bramley Farm, which is the cake place that we go Carveries. We couldn't go with them, but we could inadvertently have turned up and sat, you know, within a couple of metres of them. But we couldn't do that at home. People are finding the rules ludicrous and are thus choosing to ignore them. So, no, we're still in lockdown. No sign of being out of it anytime soon. So we can do the normal things. You can go to the doctors, go to the dentist. You can go out for a meal. You can go to the pub, just not with your friends. Which makes mockery going at all, really, but that's where we're at. Ooh, let me have a look. One of the tourist sites to see. Fremont. Right, going to have a look. Let's have a look at that. Come on, in your load. Fremont Troll. I haven't got the picture yet. The internet's slow today. Oh, wow. That's scary. Oh. That looks like it's under a motorway bridge. What a tourist attraction. Loving it. 18 foot tall stone troll. Oh, and he does. He lives on under the Aurora Avenue Bridge. Wow. That is unusual. The one that I see all the time is the, you know, the one with, I don't even know what you would call it. That light tower thing. Looks like a spacecraft on top of it. Because you always see that. Whenever you see Seattle, that's what you see. Something's just dropped on the floor and I've got no idea what it is. So I need to remember not to stand on anything. Oh, and I was in a webinar last night. I'm in an online book club. And we have like a two-hour Zoom session on a Sunday night. And for the first time, you know, I've known these people for a few weeks. I think it's been going 4 weeks. And for the first time, somebody suggested that after our name, that we were in Zoom, we edit our name to put our location after it. And I thought, fair enough, we'll do that. Not expecting that somebody was going to be from Seattle. And then somebody else said, oh, you're from Seattle. And it turned out that they were born and bred in Seattle, but they'd moved away to university. So thus ensued a long discussion about Seattle. And I'm sitting there thinking, my friend lives in Seattle. My friend lives in Seattle. But I didn't share. No. Right, let's have a look. That's a real Volkswagen Bug in its hand. Oh, wow. I could see the guy sat on top of it. That is so cute, cool. How did what's the history of that? Or did it just appear? Did it like grow? That is so cute. No, we haven't got anything that looks like that. His eye is a hubcap. The space needle, that's the thing. That's the one. Now you've mentioned it, it looks like it, but I wouldn't have guessed. Looks a bit like Shrek. Very cleverly done. How long's it been there? I have to have a look at that on a map so I know where it is. You had rioters turning to burn down the police station. Lighting trees and other things on fire. Yeah. Are people insane? That happened, I think it was last summer. It was either last summer or the one before. I think it was last summer here. People just went up onto the moors, which is about 20 miles north of here. And we're talking like huge swathes of peat and bog areas. And obviously, you set them on fire, they can smoulder for days and days. And then excessive heat with the weather, it all just exploded. And there was walls of flames. They were taking, the local fire service couldn't cope. And they were taking like support from Manchester down to Birmingham, I think, to try and keep up with it. They're just idiots. There are no words for people like that. And the other thing that was round here, very close, literally half a mile again. So Nina and Mike live half a mile in one direction, and Rachel lives half a mile in the other direction. And they were setting fire to the field behind Rachel's house, which is, as the crow flies from us, maybe like half a mile, literally. And they were just setting it on fire for the fun of doing it. We'll have a Barbie, and then when we're finished, we'll set the field on fire. Really, I am lost for words. In what mind do people think, okay, so I've eaten now, what should I do next? I know, I'll set the field on fire. How do they get to that point? Is there something wrong with these people? Well, I mean, clearly there's something wrong with them. Good night, Jonathan. Oh, no, an amendment to her order. I hope it's a worthwhile one. Thinking of seeing if there's an Airbnb in Elaine's Road so I can get loads of snacks in and watch the goings-on in the street with some binoculars. Well, Simon, there's only 8 houses in the street, but we are at like a T-junction. So there's a main road next to us. We are kind of side on with the main road. At the other end, it's like a road that goes off in both directions. So there's 2 houses at the end of the road that would give you the most amazing views. So I think it's one of those that would probably be worthwhile. How much you'd see, I don't know. Because yet again, Sunday last night, wasn't it? I was looking out the window as I was closing it. So it was like a side window. And I looked out and I thought, you've got to be kidding me. The idiot across the road had obviously been cleaning cars again. So he had the four cars that they have. They've got no garage. They're not that down to build an extension. So all four cars are out. The two next door had two cars. So that was six. Ours were obviously locked away inside, but everybody else's are all outside. The one next door had her car and a visiting car. Then there was the one next to that. They had two cars. So at that stage, we're at 10. There was two cars at the end, 12, two cars opposite, 14. Two cars on the other one, so that was 16, and five visiting cars. So I don't think you'd see much apart from cars. I don't know how they've... In fact, if we put ours out, there wouldn't be room for everybody else's, which is starting to look rather appealing. Folding clean laundry. That's a job Mike does. But hello, Debbie. How are you? I believe from one of my notifications, I have to get into Slack smartish so I can see your latest creation. But I say I'm saving it. Something to look forward to. Right. I'm going to take that link about the history of it. This troll. Oh, that's so cool. We should have one in Manchester. We should. And have a look at that later. It's a bit like Kath and Joe, isn't it, when they went on holiday. Traditionally, you know, you think of holiday things to see when you're away as like Edinburgh Castle and stuff like that. But things have kind of changed and gone another way, that there's like really unusual things. So Kath and Joe went down to Exeter and they were looking around. And I think it's a place called Bute, B-U-T-E. I think it's Bute. And on this tourist attraction leaflet, it said, you can't miss the Bute Tunnel. So they were like, oh, we've not seen that. Let's go see the Bute Tunnel. Let me see if it's actually online. I've got her picture of it. But I must admit, it wasn't something I'd ever heard of. Maybe it wasn't that. That says Cardiff. Maybe it wasn't that one. That's definitely a Bute Tunnel. But this thing turned out to be like... it looked like a trolley park at a supermarket. So we were like, she's joking. But no, apparently it's a thing. It's a plastic tunnel that runs alongside a building. I've no idea what the building is. And when I say plastic, it's a bit like, I don't know in the States how, you know, when you've got your substitutes in football matches, there used to be a thing called like a solar dome. It's like plastic. Perspex plastic, they sit on a bench and they're like shielded from the crowd inside this transparent plastic. That's exactly what this looked like. But in the UK, that's what we have at supermarkets to put the trolleys in, because obviously it rains a lot here. So they're trying to keep the trolleys dry. That's exactly what this thing looked like. So when she said it was a tourist attraction, she said, I'm not impressed with it. And I looked at it and I'm thinking, are you serious? But apparently, yes, it's a thing. There was no saving grace to it. At least the troll is unusual, isn't it? This was just like a plastic tube. So we were all saying like, well, you know, if you're on the inside of it, you're kind of shielded from COVID, aren't you? Not something I would want to see, I can assure you. But yeah, I would love to see the troll. The troll's cool. The kids would love that. That second one that's got the picture with everybody taking pictures is cool. All the kids climbing up on it. How amazing. So it was an art competition. Yeah, I can imagine that. We just tend to have graffiti kicking around. Although we did have a weird one a few years back, which was the lambs, the lamb bananas. They weren't particularly in Manchester. I think they came to visit, but the lamb bananas were actually from Liverpool. You're probably thinking I'm making this up now, don't you? No, it was a thing, the lamb bananas. And the super lamb bananas. There you go. There is a super lamb banana. It looks like, obviously, it's a lamb, but it's crossed with a banana. Let me get you a picture of this super lamb banana. There it is. I mean, I am not sure. That must have been some kind of competition or other. And I remember, obviously, the news was full of this, that the lamb bananas are being released. And they were all over Liverpool. Some were like banana coloured. But others were like, they got the children to decorate them and stuff. So if you actually look at the images for Super Lamb Bananas or Lamb Bananas, you've got some where they are decorated rather exotically. I'll send you just a link to the Google thing for Lamb Bananas, and you'll get the idea. Let's have a look. Let's get that in there. No, I don't want to shred it. I want to shorten it. That's what I want to do. Yeah, one's done up as a clown, you know, as if it wasn't hairy scary enough. They've turned the Lamb Banana into a clown. Actually, that picture's a good idea, because you can see how they just appeared in the city. And people would then go round and do a tour of the Lamb Bananas, and because they wanted to take photos of every one to get the full collection. I remember thinking at the time, my mum just said, "Why?" And I went, "I have no idea." It's obviously a thing. But people did, you know, embrace it and started running around taking pictures of it, and they were all different. I'm not sure if they're there anymore. I wouldn't expect they were there anymore. But who knows? Who knows? Could just be me. It is. I've no idea what the history of it is, but it is a very weird combination. Why would you do that? You know, I can imagine putting like two animals together, maybe, although that could be incredibly scary, couldn't it? But a banana and a lamb, I'm not sure. I've no idea. It was like lamb chops and mint sauce, but I've no idea. But the thing was, for years, for a good 2-3 years at least, these things were just all over the city. You know, you couldn't go out without falling all over them. So again, I've got no idea. Come on, load that one in and look at that. And if you look at the picture of this one, it's not that big, but they were appearing at like junctions of roads. And I'm thinking that's dangerous because you can't see around them, but just weird. Weird. This is what happens when you set up competitions for stuff, isn't it? And as I say, I know they visited Manchester. Birmingham's got a bull, a big brass bull. Where's Jonathan when you need him? Let's have a look at the Birmingham bull. Bull, Birmingham. There must be some history with that one, purely because this bull, and this bull is huge. It's in a shopping centre called the Bullring, and I don't know what came first, the bull and the shopping centre named after it, or vice versa. I've got no idea. But this thing is huge. And as you can see from this photo that I'm about to put up, it's actually just outside the Bullring shopping centre. And again, that's a bit of a tourist attraction. People want to go visit the bull. Fair enough. I think Mike went to the bull once. He went down to the Christmas market with some friends, and they were there all day. And they went to visit the bull. Thing is with this bull, they actually decorate the thing. I know it's ludicrous, but they do. So every now and then it's got clothes on of various descriptions. Here's its Elizabethan period one. Oh, I was in the UK with crackers. Absolutely crackers. Oh, you have a Rachel piggy bank. Oh, I've got to see that one. Let's have a look. Off we toddle to that one. Oh, that's cute. Look at its face. Oh, Lola would be very interested in that. 1986, a bronze cast piggy bank. Did they collect money in it? For charity or something? Isn't it amazing just what turns up? That's one. I'm trying to think of any others that we've got round here that are ludicrous. There was the bee of the bang. Don't even ask. In 2002, we had the, not the Olympics, the other one, Commonwealth Games. Manchester won the bid for the Commonwealth Games, and it was quite a big thing in the city. So lots of things got built. We have a velodrome in Manchester now. We have great swimming facilities. So prior to 2002, no Brit had ever won a cycling thing, and now we've got like world class cyclists because the facilities are so amazing. So one of the stadiums was the City of Manchester Stadium. I think that's where all of the athletics took place. Manchester City, that's now their ground. But outside it, on this big grass area, there was this thing, an ornament, sculpture, there you go, a sculpture, and it was called the Bee of the Bang. And the idea was it was supposed to represent a starting pistol going off. So they put this, I mean, there's a picture of it here, but to be honest, it doesn't do it full justice. You'd need to see all of it. Looked at from the bottom upwards, it was like a spectacular, like a firework going off, basically. There is a better picture there. We can see the bottom during construction. Nope, that was actually, that, I think this was actually during the Commonwealth Games. So this is probably the best picture. Right, so I'll put that up. So this thing appeared outside the stadium, and the purpose behind it was, although looking at it, you know, really, and you can see how big it is. This is not a small thing. This is hugely tall. Does it actually tell you how tall it is? Probably would. Let's have a look. 22 metres. Hang on. It was supported by 56 metres. So it was 56 metres tall. Which is big. And it was there during the event, and it obviously cost an absolute fortune. But if you look at it closely, you can see it's like a metal that rusts, and it rusted. And as you can see from that, I didn't get, go back from the picture, and you'll find the Wikipedia article. a couple of years later, there was these spikes on it that were over 2 meters long. One of them fell off. This was only 6 days before it actually opened, but it fell off. It started to rust, deteriorate, and parts of the bang started to fall off. In the end, they took it down. It needed to be dismantled and put into storage. You couldn't make this stuff up, could you? How much did this thing cost? It says 1.7 million there. Legal action resulted in an out-of-court settlement of 1.7 million. Have we got a price for construction? I don't see it quickly in there. I don't see it, but it's probably in there. But I know it cost an absolute fortune, and it was nothing but grief from day one. And as you can see from that picture that I've put in there, it overhung the road, and people could walk underneath it, and the bangs were falling off. I remember Mum saying it was hideous to start with. She said, and someone will get speared by one of those things. I thought, she's quite right. The pig is inordinately cute. Do you see the rubbish we have to look at like that? I mean, if somebody came to you with that, the first thing you'd think of, safety. Because there's got to be some kind of construction holding that together in the middle. It's not like a statue of a person that's like 6 foot tall and that's it. You'd struggle to cause yourself harm with it. That's got danger written all over it. And it did. It did, Debbie. There was a lawsuit. There was probably more than one. There would be lawsuits from those constructing it, who then maybe weren't looking like they weren't going to get paid. There was lawsuits from people in the locality. I mean, you wouldn't want to open your window and look at that, would you? I couldn't understand this fascination for sculptures and things like that that rust. I mean, sometimes I get it. There are some, what are they called? It's on Formby Beach, and it's they're like men. They're like, I think, is it the Formby men? Formby Beach men. Let's have a look. Is it Anthony Gormley? Yes, Anthony Gormley sculptures. And these sculptures are actually on the beach. You can walk out and you can stand next to them. And then when the tide's in, you can just see their little heads above the water. I know it sounds ridiculous. I mean, can you imagine taking children? They'd be petrified. And there have been vandalism of these things. But obviously, they are made of metal. And they are made to be have the tide come in and out on them. So obviously, they rust. Seriously. I'll send you this link, which is Visit England, although it's enough to put anybody off visiting England. From us, that's probably about 55 miles. In fact, it's quite close to where Jane lives. Jane could probably get there within 10 minutes. It would probably take us over an hour. But if you use the thing and flick through the pictures, there's two pictures there. I'll try and get a better one of them all. They were put up a long time ago, and they were supposed to be that they would rust. And they are quite a tourist attraction. Unbelievable to me, but they are. People seem to love them. Other people have said, like, they're naked, so they put clothes on them. But I think they were put in after the Angel of the North. The Angel of the North is a huge structure. You can see it from the motorway as you head up to near where Stuart comes from. Angel of the North. And again, that was supposed to be rusty. It looks a little bit like an aircraft, but I remember when it very first went up, I'm having a look now, completed in 1998. It's supposed to be an angel and it's 20 metres tall with a wingspan of 54 metres, which is 180 foot. So they built this thing. And again, weather-wise, it's rusty. No, I will admit, it's big enough that from a distance, you're just going to see the outline of an angel from the north. But it takes a lot of maintenance because it isn't actually like a painted structure. So when the rust gets to it, bits fall off. It could be me, but I like something a little bit more traditional with my statues. But the Angel of the North has become iconic of the north. So I guess that one's been there that long. It's kind of all right now. Where is it? Tyne and Wear. So it's on the way to Geordieland, as we would call it here, which is Newcastle, Middlesbrough, out that way. But yeah, they started building these statues that were intentionally rusty, which is fine. But then, like I say, when bits start falling off, not quite so good. And people have been known to climb the Angel of the North and put like big Christmas hats on it and stuff. You're not supposed to, obviously, but they do. Good evening, Anthony. We're talking about our wonderful, wonderful tourist attractions in the UK. The Bee of the Bang that collapsed. The Angel of the North. The Men on Formby Beach. Do you know, people think of Britain as like Jane Austen territory. All twee and flowers. And then you realise the kind of rubbish that we put up now. But that one's been very successful, the Angel of the North. People do go see it and things. But there was lots of opposition before it started, obviously. And but it's there and people are now actually using it. So when I say using it in terms of they will use the outline to promote visiting the area. So that one has actually worked. Very, very strange to me. Very strange. Hey, you see on there, it's actually been used on the TV in Vera. So you may actually have seen it. Kim, you watch Vera, don't you? I'm sure I remember you mentioning it. I've only seen one episode, I think. It's the one of a naked man. I think I've seen these on someone's blog that I follow. Yeah, I think there is. In fact, there's probably more than one. Let's have a look, see if we can find it. What we need is a better picture of it than that. Right. I think there must be at least five. Formby, isn't it? I have actually been to Formby, but when I went, it was way before that appeared. All right, let's have a look. Oh, yeah, there are actually quite a few of them. How many can I see in that one? Oh, it's on Pinterest. It'll take forever to load, won't it? Yeah, there are quite a few, but they always, most of the photos, being honest, tend to show you from the back. I wonder why. Does it tell you how many were actually there? Oh, don't keep opening it up in the same one. Wikipedia. Oh, it's called Another Place. Oh, and it's Crosby Beach. I thought it was Formby. It's on Crosby Beach, which is in Formby. Yeah, they've got barnacles growing on them now. And is that... Yeah, there we go. Do you know, if Paul came in or something right now, because I've not seen him so far. And he just sees this. This is the front of one of them on a good day, although it must be rather cold, just saying. Yeah, that's one of them, but he is looking out to sea. And you can see where the sea has come in. There's like barnacles growing all over these things. But there's quite a few of them. I'm trying to find out how many there are. I would have guessed about six, but it looks like there could well have been more. Cast iron figures spread out over a 2 mile stretch of the beach. Wow. They're 6'2" each and weigh 1,340 pounds. Wow. They are casts of Gormley's own body. It's a bit indulgent, isn't it? But there you go. Yeah, it was going to be a temporary thing, that's right. And the Coast Guard was concerned about them as well. I mean, you are putting huge structures on a beach. So it's going to be there for a certain amount of time. But as it says there, 14 years ago, the council gave it permission to stay permanently. But I'm still trying to find out how many. It says a piece of modern art. Oh, there you go, 100. 100 of those that are on that beach. Anthony never knew they were that detailed. Well, maybe they weren't. Maybe it's barnacles. You just don't know. They are, Simon. They are a cast of his own body. That is very indulgent. But, you know, in Simon's mind, we have that on our street. A cast from every house. Seen as though it's weird. You've not seen the angel on Vera. The angel is in the titles, I believe, Kim. I do believe the Angel of the North is in the titles for Vera. Let's have a look. Where's it gone? Morrison Supermarket. No, it's on TV. Come on. TV, TV, TV. The long-running television detective show Vera uses a brief view of the Angel of the North as an establishing shot to help establish the setting of the series being Northumberland, the northernmost county of England. So it is very brief in the titles at the beginning. A button on a fur coat, so to speak. Oh, yes, indeed. You skip the titles. I do that, and I skip ads as well. There are very few programmes that I actually watch live. So obviously I've got like box sets that I've got, or I'm watching on a service where I don't, where there's one ad at the beginning, but no other adverts. But there's certain programmes that I want to watch as near live as possible. And one of them was Inspector Morse, which became, there's two other spin-offs of that, Lewis and Endeavour. And the thing is, when I was on Twitter more than I am now, which is like very infrequently, but when I was on Twitter more, people would be talking about it. So I'd think, oh, but, you know, I know that these shows are about an hour 28 to an hour 29. But the slot for them on the TV is 2 hours. So I sit down at like 8 o'clock, press pause. And Mike's like, what are you doing? I said, nothing. Not doing anything until the ads have got going. So I'll start watching from about 25 past. And when it gets to the point that there's ads on, I just fast forward through them. And it's comical when I finish the show the same time as all the other people that have been watching it from the beginning, who have mindlessly sat through all the ads. Because I think 31 to 32 minutes of ads is ludicrous. They're just mind-numbing adverts that drive me mad. So I do ignore them. Oh, Kim's DNA points to Manchester, but she's not going back that far. Oh, we could find we're related, Kim. You never know. I think eventually mine goes back to Ireland on one side of the family, and possibly Dad was in the northwest, but he also moved out towards Northumberland way. He had a job over there when he was in his teens. Oh, I have spelling issues every day, Deb. Don't worry about it. Yeah, watch the titles next time. I actually loved the Inspector Morse titles because at the time they were filming Inspector Morse, which was about 86, 87 through to the 90s. I was actually at Oxford studying, and I wasn't there all the time. The course that I was doing was a postgrad, but I hadn't actually graduated at that point from London. So I was doing it like in the middle of my first degree, just to make things complicated. So I wasn't there every day because I needed to make sure that I was in London doing the other stuff as well at the same time. Why do one degree at a time when you can do two? So when I went up to Oxford, it would have been more expensive to have like student accommodation there all the time when I didn't actually need it all the time. It was actually cheaper to stay at the Randolph, which is the hotel that you always see in Inspector Morse. There was an episode called The Wolvercut Tongue, and it was about a group of American tourists who'd come over on a coach trip, and they were staying at the Randolph. So all the stuff was happening. It was being filmed inside the Randolph. It's bang in the centre of Oxford, and it's beautiful. It's a really expensive hotel, but it's really nice. So I was there for like 3 days, and it was like, well, if I took on student accommodation, I'd have to pay for like 2 months. So it was actually cheaper to stay at the Randolph. And what was great about it was when Morse was in town filming, all the cast and crew stayed at the Randolph. So I had great fun staying at the Randolph. I loved it. Oh, it was brilliant. I think that was, when you see the titles of Inspector Morse, there were lots of locations in Oxford that were like iconic. And I loved it. There's like, oh, been there. Oh, sat an exam there. Yeah, loved it. I think there was one in either my college or the one next door. My college was University College Dublin, University College Oxford. But there were quite a few others. So that one's on the high street. So there was a lot of shots where they'd go into like a clothing shop and it sold the regalia for the university. And I'm like to Mum, been in there, bought a sweatshirt. This is what I'm like, loved it. I didn't get much in the way. Like Mike went to see Checkers Plays Pop being recorded. I didn't get any of that. But there was meeting all the cast of Morse, which was fantastic. And when I was in London, and this was just randomly one Sunday. So Sunday, London was reasonably quiet as London ever got. And I decided I was going to head off to the Old Bailey. And I wanted a photograph of it. There's two parts to the Old Bailey. There's the really old part, and there's a newer part that was built behind it. So the older part is beautiful. I mean, we're going back to the 1700s. It's a beautiful building. We've got the Scales of Justice on the roof, on the dome of it. But there's another bit lower down, and it's like a mother surrounded by, it's like kids, I think, looking down. And it says, "Defend the children of the poor." And it's a beautiful thing. So I wanted to go and make sure I got a photograph of it. So I heads down there and I'm taking my photograph at the old building. And I glances down at the new building and it looked like a day at court, that there was a court case going on. But there's no way lawyers are going to work on a Sunday. So I ambled down there just having a look. And I thought, there's huge TV cameras, so there must be something happening. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they're sitting on a Sunday. But that would be really weird. And there was a crowd gathered opposite, maybe like, you know, 15 people. And they were behind a barrier. And I'm thinking, this is really weird. So I gets down there and I realised as I look across, these aren't news cameras. They were actually filming cameras for Rumpole of the Bailey. And it was a scene for Rumpole of the Bailey that they were filming outside. Leo McKern himself wasn't there, but Peter Bowles was. He was the one in To the Manor Born. And he was a judge in Rumpole of the Bailey. And he'd said something silly. And there was this protest as he was going into work against him. And it was, the episode was called The Tap End. And he'd basically said that, like, if you're having like two people in a bath, the lady should take the tap end. And these women were like, don't be ridiculous. So that was what the argument was about. Oh, we know how to scrap here. So I was so excited waiting for this episode. And when it came on, I said, this is the one, Mum. Let's watch it. And I told her all about what happened. And we had a power cut. we never did see this scene. And Rumpole of the Bailey, for some reason, was never repeated. When the box set came out, I was there. I said, right, sit down. We are watching this episode. But honestly, it was like 25 years later before I got hands on this episode. But those were my claims to fame in terms of TV programmes. They're the only ones I've ever seen. Ooh, the Jane Sinclair genealogy mystery is set in Manchester. Cool. Should I start watching Inspector Morse? I presume you mean Morse. Morse is fabulous. Morse is a wonderful series. I'd say, would it be dated? It would be dated in terms of, like, these days you might be talking more about DNA and mobile phones. But no, I don't think it would be dated. It was all really how clever Inspector Morse was and how down-to-earth Lewis was, his sidekick. But I would say, yes, it's well worth a watch. Lewis was good as well. I thought Lewis was particularly good because you're thinking, how can Lewis take over from Morse? And by this stage, John Thor had died. And you're thinking, well, how can Lewis take over? Because he's not the educated, whiskey-drinking, he was very down-to-earth. How on earth can he all of a sudden have these flashes of inspiration that Morse used to have? And what they did was, which I thought was brilliant, they partnered him up with another younger detective played by Lawrence Fox, and he was the educated one. He was going, he'd been to seminary, and he had all like the background to stuff, and it really did work. My mum said she actually preferred Lewis. She thought Lewis was that good, she preferred it to Morse. Endeavour goes the other way. Endeavour goes back to when Morse was a baby detective. So it's set in the 60s. I don't find that one as good. It's not a bad series. I just think Lewis was probably the best of the three, but definitely, definitely worth it. You love the Radio 4 dramatisations of Rumpel. Didn't Benedict Cumberbatch do one of those? There was Benedict Cumberbatch, I think, and... Oh, was it Prunella Scales' husband? What's his name? Oh, when he comes to me. He's got a son as well, hasn't he? Samuel. Can't for that. I can see his... The vision of his face. Can't remember his name. Somebody let me know. Did Andrew Sachs do it? No, I'm thinking it was Prunella Scales' husband. I should know because her son, Timothy West. I think Timothy West was in it. He was in Faulty. He was in Faulty. Timothy West and their son, Samuel West. They're both actors. Yeah, I think Timothy West was in one version of Rumpel that was out there. But they're just so cleverly written. They are very, very cleverly written. Lewis went to Doctor Who, did he? Oh, don't watch that. Let's have a look. I was staying in a hotel in London, and the morning we left the street opposite the hotel, being cordoned off, and there were police and fire engines, big lights and cameras. It was Sherlock when Baker Street got blown up. Oh, Anthony, I'd have loved to have seen that. That was a fantastic series, but went off towards the end, as far as I was concerned. The first series, if I've seen those episodes once. And I watched them on the TV, but I also got the DVD set. And the DVD box set's fascinating. There was a pilot made of the first episode. And the first episode that was broadcast was 90 minutes. But the pilot episode was 60 minutes. But it was exactly the same story. And I thought, how can you... how can you stretch 60 minutes into 90? Well, I thought we can put a lot of filler stuff in it. But, you know, I'd seen the 90-minute one first, and I'm thinking that was just great. So what did they take out? What was missing in the 60-minute version? Because the 60-minute version had to be good enough to get the BBC to commission it. So I was thinking, you know, what was missing? And I watched them both, and they are like... There are bits that are identical, but there's also bits that, in hindsight, you realise were filler bits. Like, there was a car chase, only it wasn't a car chase. It was a taxi. I think it was Sherlock Holmes following a taxi, and Sherlock Holmes was taking all of the shortcuts. So you saw this taxi driving along, and then he's, like, running. And looking back on it, when you've seen the 60-minute version... you think, yeah, that was a filler. But they were both very good. I would say they were actually both worth watching. So I love that. I think I've seen those, like Studying Scarlet, the first one. Must have seen that a dozen times. And my mum adored it. I was really nervous to tell her it was on. Because before you'd seen it, you had no idea if it's going to be any good or not. And about 10 years before, Rupert Everett had done a kind of similar thing on Sherlock Holmes. It was set in the original time frame, though, whereas this one was contemporary. It was set in the original time frame, and it was called Silk Stockings, I think. Sherlock Holmes and the Silk Stockings. And Rupert Everett, yeah, really good. He could definitely do Sherlock Holmes, got the look. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It wasn't Sherlock Holmes, if you're with me, but it wasn't at all bad. Mum loathed it. So when this thing, and when Mum loathed a TV show that I said, oh, you know, there's this TV show coming up about Sherlock Holmes, I got the blame for it. So I read, you know, new version of Sherlock Holmes. I thought, oh no. Because by then she might have heard of it somewhere else where I'd have just not mentioned it. So I thought, what am I going to do? Am I going to tell her or not? And then I read on, you know, set contemporary, and I'm like, whoa, if she didn't like the last one, she's not going to like this one. And the next she says, saw a thing on the BBC, new Sherlock Holmes. I thought, oh no. So I said, I'm not saying a word, Mum. I said, because the last time I recommended it, and she said, I might watch it. She watched it. We didn't watch it together, but she watched it live. I watched it live. We met up the next day. I said, don't know about you, but I loved it. And she went, it was fabulous. Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, it was amazing. I thought, where's my mother? What have you done with her? Because she didn't like anything contemporary like that. But she loved that one. Loved that one. There was a bunch of Rumpels, was there? I'm pretty much Leo McKern was my favourite. Absolute thought he was brilliant. John West, the tin fish guy. Close. You enjoyed Sherlock, found it difficult to follow. I thought the first two series were pretty good, and I didn't find those difficult to follow. When we got on to, like, I can't remember if it was series 3 or 4, but particularly the last episode was like, I'm going to have to watch this 20 times because I think I missed a lot there. It was either fabulous or it was tripe. Done up as fabulous, and I couldn't quite make my mind up which with that one. Ooh, Deb thought she saw Mike's dad in a show. Was made in 1998. The guy looked the same. It wasn't, though. It was a British actor. Oh, he was working in 1998. He'd have been about... gosh, how old was he now? Let me think. He was he 83 or 93? No idea. I'm gone a minute. Can't work it out. No, he was 93. So in 1998, he would have been 61-ish. Something like that. So yeah, he was still working. Mike Tomlinson. No, Mike's dad's stage name was Tony Wingate or Anthony Wingate. That was his stage name. He was in Prime Suspect that Kim was watching a few weeks back. He was in that. He was a jury foreman. He was also in Darling Buds of May. He was a jury foreman. He was in Emmerdale. He was a jury foreman. No, actually. He was a clerk of the court in Emmerdale. But the other two, he was... And he was the clerk of the court in the Darling Buds of May. So one... He was a jury foreman in Prime Suspect. He was the jury foreman in Crown Court, which is a British show from the 70s. He was then clerk of the court in Darling Buds, and he was the clerk of the court in... what's the other one? What did I just say? Emmerdale. Emmerdale and the Darling Buds. And he was in Coronation Street as well. He played, if you've ever seen Coronation Street, oh, what's his face? The old guy now. William Roach. What's his character? Ken Barlow. He played Ken Barlow's boss at the Weatherfield Gazette, which was the paper, the local paper. And he played his boss. It was the episode of the Darling Buds. Now, I didn't see all of these, but obviously I saw that episode. Pop Larkin was up in court for something. So there's this scene in the courtroom, and obviously Pop Larkin's holding court, literally. And Mike's dad is supposed to be bringing the witnesses in. And you got Mike's dad rolling his eyes, you know, because every time he tried to do his job, someone else would shout. So if he was supposed to shout like order in court, somebody, one of the Larkin family in the public gallery would shout it. So most of this episode, Mike's father's just rolling his eyes. But he did do it rather well, obviously. What else was he in that you might have seen? He was in Brookside, which is a UK, well, it was a UK soap. It's now defunct. But he was in that for about 3 months. He played Property Magnet in that. Let's have a look what else he was in. Mike found loads of stuff because obviously, was it a birthday? Trying to think. Could have been Mike's mum's birthday. But we're in lockdown, and obviously it's difficult to come up with like a really good idea for a present. So Mike said, I've got an idea, and off he went. And he found all these clips of the things his dad had been in, and he put them together. She absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. Oh, what's that one? No, that's not it. Hang on, helps if you put the right name in, doesn't it? Let's put that in. There was another thing he was in with Ricky Tomlinson. Is it Tomlinson? He was in The Royal Family and he was in Brookside. And they did a film. This film was based in Liverpool and it was like a comedy, but it was released. It was a comedy based on, I think it was like a religious thing, a statue that had been like crying, and it was called The Virgin of Liverpool, and he played the priest in that. So yeah, his last role was Emmerdale, but there's Coronation Street. Played loads of people in Coronation Street. He was also in something we used to watch at school, which was How We Used to Live, and that was like a history programme. I loved that. I thought that was the best thing about history, that. And they did all kinds of programmes, but it like brought history to life for you. They should release that in a box set. I'd buy that in an instant. There's lots of British series that he was in. Last of the Summer Wine, Horace, as I say, Crown Court. But mainly he did theatre work. So TV to him was like secondary to his theatre work. But yeah, you could well see something. Prime Suspect, The Live of Birds. Played a taxi driver in The Live of Birds. And of course, me, I probably did see him in Crown Court. He had multiple roles in that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at least. So I probably saw him in all of them. The one that Mike found the video of was the one where he was the jury foreman. He was the jury foreman twice. I think it was Sheep in Wolf's Clothing. And obviously he hadn't seen that since he recorded it. And we did this thing for Christmas with some clips. And Mike said it's on YouTube and he had never seen it. So Mike puts it on and Mike's mum's like, oh, this is fabulous. And Mike's dad's like, oh, we're not watching this. We're not watching this. We're not watching this. And then it panned round and you saw the jury foreman talking. And he went, just a minute, leave that. That's me. And sat there watching it. So fantastic. Is Mike's dad listed Internet Movie Database? He is. I'll give you the link. As I say, a different name, but it's him. Not actually too much information, just what he's been in. There's nothing like a profile of him because he was a very shy man. I'm sure I've told you this. When he was in Coronation Street, which was one of the biggest soap in the UK, he went and filled up the car and he goes in to pay and this girl said, oh, it's you, isn't it? It's you. I've seen you on the telly. You're in Coronation Street, aren't you? And he went, no, you must have me confused with somebody else. And of course, if she'd have checked the name, he was then Tony Thomas, but his working name was Anthony Wingate. So, yeah, it was him. Honestly, it was him. But poor woman, she was right and he convinced her she was wrong. Naughty, naughty. Yeah, there's not much of a profile in there, though, is there? I don't know who puts the profile up there. Obviously, there's no date of birth and date that he died. But it would be nice if we knew how to actually do that. But you can see from that he was in quite a bit. But theatre was his love. theatre was his first love. And he went all, he toured in Scotland when he was younger. He did work, his hometown was Liverpool, so he did work in Liverpool. He did the Bolton Octagon, which is our favourite theatre, and we have one in Manchester called the Library Theatre, and he worked there as well. So yeah, done loads and loads of stuff. An extra landlord in a place I had a room in was often an extra, and he said he had a party to watch his Only Fools and Horses episode live, where he played one of several tramps around a bonfire with Del. Oh, that, you know, Lola's first family, the girl who actually was her mum, so Lola's grandmother, does extra work, but she also does like speaking roles as well. But one of the things that she's done in the last year or so, she said they always went away at Christmas. So she dropped Lola off. It was Christmas. I think it was when we were talking about adopting her. And she said, you know, when we're going away at Christmas, so you know, that wouldn't be fair. I don't expect you to just do Christmas. Please adopt her. And she said, and I've been doing a lot of work. I've been doing some work on some ads. So I said, oh, anything in particular? And the two things she'd done was she'd been in Coronation Street at a Christmas party. But the other one was an advert that we have here for a service called Foxy Bingo. So I think it's like an online casino type thing called Foxy Bingo. And there's a fox in it, a bloke in a fox outfit. And you also see like these girls like wiggling the bottoms in front of the TV, in front of the camera, with like a foxtail hanging off their clothes. So she said, no, I've got a Foxy Bingo ad coming up. We were like, do you have to wear, you know, I said, won't it get hot in that suit? And she said, oh no, I'm one of the ladies. She said, we just have the tail. So Christmas comes round. I think I did make a point of recording Coronation Street and whizzing through it. But the advert came on and I'm that busy watching this advert, and it was a house party. So Foxy opens the door and then all these people pile in and they're going to have this party. And I'm like to Mike, she's there, she's there, she's there. Look, over there, over there. they're abroad. So the show, she hadn't actually seen it. So we took this ad and converted it to a little video and then pinged it to her on WhatsApp so she could see this ad because she hadn't seen the finished thing. Oh my. Right, we're going to finish up part. So part two of Simon's Del Boy story. Rodney threw a bunch of blow-up dolls off a cliff on top of them, causing an explosion. The box was too small. That's the remainder of the tale. That episode was Danger UXB, and I love that episode. That is one of my favourites. I have two favourite episodes of Only Fools. One was the one with the rubber dolls, and the other one was the Jolly Boys outing, which I think was a Christmas special. I could watch and watch and watch and watch those. They are the funniest episodes ever. My perfect Christmas viewing would be like the highlights of Morecambe and Wise, followed by those two episodes of Only Fools and Horses and the Vicar of Dibley Christmas special with the meals. Those are just totally my favourites. Absolutely brilliant. Love them. I'm actually looking at this internet movie database thing of Mike's father and I'm thinking there's a bit missing. The Liverpool film's not in it. The Virgin of Liverpool. So I don't know. He definitely had a credit because I've seen it. How weird. Maybe his agent wasn't keeping this as up to date as he needed to. But the film's in there. I wonder why he isn't listed. Let's have a look. That's the one, 2003. So it was Ricky Tomlinson, Imelda Staunton, Johnny Vegas. Oh, it was all the stars. Michael Angelus. Good grief, he's died now. Tom Georgeson. Yeah, there was loads of people in that. Right, let's have a look. Where's the rest of them? No, they haven't put the full cast up. That's why he's not listed. That's not on. He was definitely in it. Oh, he hadn't seen that one at all. There was something about... something happened when it was about to be released and he got put back a bit, which meant he didn't actually get to see it, so he'd never seen it. And then you can get the DVD on... Amazon. So we went and got the DVD for him, so we actually got to see it. The Christmas show is just the best, isn't it, Kim? I mean, she's fabulous in all the episodes, but that one, that one, I could just watch and watch. I remember sitting here last year probably late one night, because if you remember, Mike was away looking after his dad. So it would have been one of our laughable holidays. And because Mike was away, I could work any time I wanted. So I'm looking after Lola. I couldn't go anywhere looking after Lola. And I thought, I'm going to put that episode on. And I remember watching it about 2 o'clock in the morning, tittering away. Lola's like wandering in with like, why are you making a noise, Mum? It's late. But it's such a good episode. It is the best, best one. You're in the middle of watching all the Only Fools and Horses episodes. Well, I intend, Simon knows about this, don't you, Simon, you little star? I'm about to watch Father Ted for the first time. So I'm starting off with series one of Father Ted. So I'm looking forward to that. I've heard great things about it, and I've seen like loads of clips, but only ever like one gag, 30 seconds. Never actually seen an episode. Probably because it was Channel 4. When was the first series of that? Because at the time we had very dodgy reception on Channel 4. Father Ted episode guide. Let's have a look. 1998. Yeah, we would probably have had... Oh no, that's series 3, so it's before that. 1995. Absolutely. What else did you get for Christmas? We would have had very dodgy reception on Channel 4 and 5. So I think the issue was you could never really guarantee that you could watch it. Other thing was, at that stage, 95, let me think, 94, 95. Yeah, I was actually working for somebody else. So I couldn't be up late. I've no idea what time it was on, but I wasn't watching much TV at all on account of the fact I was working for somebody else. But it's all right. I came to my senses. I started working for them in, I think it was November 94, and walked out. June 95, had enough. So probably just after Father Ted started. I think I felt if I'd missed the first series, and then they do put the repeats on, but you know, they put a repeat on and you're like, are they putting them on in the right order? Because otherwise it won't make any sense. And of course, the lady who played the housekeeper, whose name escapes me, was the one. We had our tax system changed hugely in the late 90s. And it was on the TV for weeks, advert after advert after advert about, you know, are you up to speed with tax? Don't let tax be taxing. And it was this lady. And they were saying that you had to fill in your own tax return, which prior to that, you would send information and then it would be kind of generated for you. So it was a huge thing. It's called self-assessment. So there were packs that were available and all sorts. And she was saying, make sure you fill your tax return in. And she'd say, ah, go on, go on, go on, go on, go on, which I presume is like what she said in the series. So I was aware of her, but never actually seen an episode. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be catching up. Anthony assures me it's brilliant. Well, I think what's going to make it have an edge for me is the fact that our priest is called Ned with an N, and people see the ED and they call him Father Ted, and it's the one thing that rattles him. Most of the time, he's fairly calm. But if somebody calls him Father Ted, he's off like a rocket. So whenever somebody says Father Ted, I'm going to be thinking Father Ned. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Definitely going to watch that. Now, the things that I could watch again and again are probably The West Wing, Vicar of Dibley, and Morse and Lewis. Those ones I could definitely watch again and again. Catholicism right over Judaism for jokes. Oh, absolutely, Simon. Absolutely. I think he would have watched it. He was probably... How long has he been a priest now? He would probably have watched that, and he could well have been in seminary at the time. And he was in seminary in Ireland. He comes from Ireland. He comes from Wexford, which is south of Dublin. So he must have seen it, and I don't know why he takes offence at it so much, other than maybe he just doesn't like people getting his name wrong. But there you go. Almost made you want to convert. Good grief, Simon. It must be good. Is this convert from being an atheist? That would take some doing. That would be amazing. Just looked awfully good fun. We do have a laugh. I mean, unless you get a priest who is, you know, a real stickler, in which case it's no fun at all. But even with priests who are a bit up themselves, as it were, you know, we talked about a Eucharistic minister giving the host out. So there have been times when I'm on Eucharistic duty where instead of me giving the wine out, I'll get a plate full of hosts and I'll have to do exactly what the priest does. But the other priest across the road, so we've got like two areas in Sale. There's the west side and the east side. The west side, Ned deals with everything. The east side, this other priest deals with it. And if somebody comes up to a Eucharistic minister, they're not allowed to give them a blessing. They have to swap sides and only the priest can give the blessing, which is like a really strict interpretation of it. But even that priest, you know, he can have a laugh. It is quite a humorous religion, honestly. It is. All creatures great and small's been remade. Oh, who did they cast in that? I remember reading that they were going to redo it, but I didn't see the other one. I didn't see the original. That was, oh, one of the ones who went on to be Doctor Who, wasn't it? Man married to Sandra Davidson. And who's the older one? Oh, and of course, Christopher Timothy was in it. Robert Hardy. So I think I probably saw like half an episode, but I think I was very young back then. Simon could almost believe. Do you know, we have people in the church don't believe at all. They just love the community. So they would say that for them, their faith is not, you know, about angels in the sky. It's about community and living a good life and working together. Seriously, half of them like, oh, I've got to say a prayer. Oh, fair enough. we have everything. We have all sorts. We're very lucky that the community is so laid back. Wasn't always like that, I can assure you. Think back to my grandmother's day and my mom, my poor mother. There were strict rules that you couldn't eat meat on a Friday. You had to have fish, which some branches of Catholicism are trying to bring back, which, you know, we do tend to eat fish on a Friday, but it's not deliberate. And if I want a chicken salad at lunch, I'm having one. But back in the day, that was a cardinal sin. You could not eat meat on a Friday. And my mum was sorting out all her wedding day the next day, which was 1956. So she's that busy sorting her wedding day out, making sure that because back then, you know, you had to do everything yourself. It wasn't like now where you've got your wedding planners. She was doing everything herself. So all of the food had been made and they were busy trying to get it to the venue. And they were putting like sandwiches in prams. And that was the only mode of transport they had back then, 1958. So they were pushing these sandwiches in prams. They get there and they're famished. So they sit down and say, oh, it won't matter. We'll just have a sandwich each. And they eat one of these sandwiches. They'd eaten it and then realised it was a ham sandwich and it was Friday. They were absolutely mortified. She was getting married the next day. She was thinking the priest wouldn't marry her. So they had to go off to the priest house, the presbytery, and knock on the door. And of course, the priest was ultra strict back then. So she's knocked on the door with all her bridesmaids, so a whole gaggle of women. And said, sorry, Father. Now, what happened was it was my grandmother who'd said to her, you'll have to get to the priest and ask for forgiveness for that. You'll have to go to confession for that. So they all turned up and they said, sorry, Father, but we were hungry and we forgot it was Friday. We've eaten a ham sandwich. And they all had to go into confession. And then he gave them like a penance and then said it was okay. And now to me, you know, if you can do that, then don't bother going. Don't tell him. But she did. And that was what happened. Classic. She told that tale for years after because she realised that they changed the rules. About 10 years after her wedding, they changed the rules and said, oh, never mind. This is only eating fish on a Friday thing. It's fine. You can eat what you want. And to her, for something to be something, a rule that you would stick with, it had to be a rule, not something that you could change because you've decided, you know, you quite fancy a burger. So she always said it was ridiculous. And she said, if that happened now, I wouldn't go to the priest and ask for his forgiveness. Oh, the happy memories of her wedding, though. So whenever I look at her photos, I'm always thinking, oh, in the day before you were begging forgiveness. Oh. the dog, Tricky Woo. And the new one's filmed in Grassington. Oh, 15 minutes away. Oh, I'm going to look forward to that. Mr. Deb went to Loyola High School, run by the Jesuits, and he hated it. No girls. Well, my school was all girls, no boys, but it wasn't a faith school. I just hated school, full stop. But I know a lot of people who went to Catholic schools weren't impressed, my mother included. That's why she didn't want me at a faith school. She said they were far too intolerant. She was a good view to have, actually. She was ahead of herself, wasn't she? Because, you know, at that age, she doesn't know whether you're going to be a fluid gender or LGBT, and how would a Catholic school handle that? So she was thinking, like, well, whatever the future brings, I don't want there to be any kind of limitations that you're going to be made to feel bad about it, which I think was quite clever of her. That explains a lot, Simon, doesn't it? Your school was all boys. You were all boys together, hence your fabulous sense of humour. We did once play a hockey game against the boys. That was a comedy in itself. There was Sail Girls Grammar and Sail Boys Grammar. Needless to say, the boys' grammar was about 150 yards from my front door. The girls' grammar, 3 miles across town. So I would love to have swapped that. But they merged it and knocked it down, and there's now a housing estate where it used to be. Showing on Tuesday the 1st of September at 9 p.m. Ooh, right, I'll make a note of that, Anthony. I'll make a note, because I've just put on my calendar, because I do not want to miss this. On the 31st, I think it is. Is that a Monday, the 1st? Let's have a look. Sunday the 30th, so this coming Sunday, Strike is on at 9 o'clock, which unfortunately is clashing with my book club. I have to miss the last half hour of Strike for my book club, or the first half hour of the book club, depending on how you look at it. But Strike is the one written by Robert Galbraith, which is J.K. Rowling. So I love that. Cormor and Strike books. And this one's Lethal White, I think, which is the fourth book. The fifth book in the series is just about to come out, but it's such a well-done series. I think it'd be good even if I hadn't read the books, but I've read the books and the casting is absolutely perfect. Love it. So that's coming on Sunday. Do you get that abroad? Strike? Might be called something else. Cormor and Strike? BBC series. Love it. Brilliant. The Catholic schools where I grew up had excellent teachers. All the students coming into the public school at high school level, we're always on the honour roll. Everybody wanted to go to St John's. I think we're at that point Catholic school wise now, but I do think Mum was right in her day. It was that strict. You couldn't like have a life. But I mean, now I know the lay preacher at our local Catholic grammar school, and it's a great place now. Now it's fantastic. They have the end of year parties, the proms, the full lot, and everybody is supported no matter what. But back then, not quite the same. Alf White, which is James Herriot's real name, was the vet on the farm my mother grew up on. Oh, how amazing. I have a recollection of vaguely hearing that James Herriot wasn't his real name, but I never knew what his real name was. And when we went over to Yorkshire, we went to Nid Hall, which is a Warner Leisure Hotel. And somehow, wrongly, inadvertently, we'd been given a suite, and the suite was the James Herriot suite. And it was a fabulous room. It was gorgeous. But no, Alf Wright, no, that does not ring a bell at all. I guess he needed a pseudonym back then, but now everybody knows who he is. So it looks like we're all gearing up for decent TV programmes in the autumn, because it's been pretty dry over the summer. Of course, we have had the news to keep us company, which is probably not a good thing with most of the stuff that's in the news. But we shall convene again tomorrow, still marooned at Magpie's headquarters. I wonder if we'll get a review this week, you know, something to look forward to. But probably not. I think it's going to be exactly the same. What's going to be full this week is getting the little kiddies back to school, because they should be going back to school back end of next week. So we'll see how that pans out. Wait for the R rate to skyrocket. That's my prediction anyway. Let's have a look. At the time, vets were not allowed to publish books. You had to use an alias. Wow, that's strict. When you think about vets now, you've got Super Vet. Noel Fitzpatrick. He's got a TV series, never mind a book. Wow. Wow. Now, I've never read those books either. I didn't see the series. I shall have a look at the new series. Have they made this new series contemporary, or is it kind of a remake in terms of it's set historically? I don't know which would be best with that. Some of these series that are set back in time are actually quite relaxing, including like murder mystery ones, because in this day and age, it's just like, oh, get the DNA right, solved. You know, and back in the day, that didn't happen. So I quite like those. There's a series of books by, God, what's the name? The One's Curse on the House of Fawcett. Good grief, what's the author's name? One was Oscar de Muriel. But that's a different book series. Let's have a look if I can find it. It's on the House of... The Mangle Street Murders. That was the other one. The Mangle Street Murders. You're not showing me, are you? You're just being awkward. Right, Mangle Street Murders... Go on, give me the Gower Street Detective. That's the one. Oh, M.R.C. Kasazian. So it's not an easy name, Kasazian. There's only about four books in the series, but they're set around the time of Sherlock Holmes, and they're a bit of a spoof on Sherlock Holmes. They are laugh-out-loud funny. They really are. That's something that, you know, it's not, let's get the DNA and fingerprints. Obviously, set back then, you couldn't. So there is a character in it called Sidney Grice, and he's supposed to be like Sherlock Holmes, but it is laugh-out-loud funny. It might be very British humour, but trust me, it's laugh-out-loud funny. It's set historically. Great, I will be looking forward to that. But for the moment, I'm going to say goodnight from me and goodnight from Mike, who's still in his meeting. And we will both see you tomorrow. Stay safe, guys.